What seems like a rather long and contentious presidential primary season is rapidly winding down. But two Vanderbilt political scientists who teach and write about campaigns say there have been others along the way just as lengthy and full of verbal sparring. Joining us to provide some perspective, distinguished professor of political science John Geer and professor of political science Bruce Oppenheimer. How would you two describe this stage of the presidential campaign? John?
Basically, the general election is now beginning to take form. In all likelihood, Obama will be the Democratic nominee, and McCain has been known for a long time as being the Republican nominee. The Democratic nomination contest isn't completely settled, but pretty much so. And so you now see this transition to the general election, and Obama is campaigning much more as the nominee than as, in fact, a competitor for the nomination. And that's changing things. And I think, in fact, McCain's now getting attention, and we're now, I think you could say, you know, we've entered the general election phase of this process.
And you can see some change in the nature of what they're saying, in that McCain is, for example, has been scheduling a series of policy speeches sort of to set things out and give greater specificity to his positions on issues and perhaps to try and set the parameters for what the debate will be about.
Since Hillary Clinton is still running, where does that place her? Is she talking about issues, or is she still just trying to go after Obama?
Well, she's still talking a lot about electability, but she's also, willing to attack McCain as well. For example, the president's speech in Israel recently got a lot of visibility and publicity and was an implicit attack on Obama. And both she and Obama and a lot of Democrats immediately went after both the president and McCain.
Did that strike either of you strange that President Bush would be jumping into the presidential campaign so early?
Well, I don't know about strange. I thought it was probably not necessarily well-timed, because accusing Obama implicitly, as Bruce just mentioned, of appeasement is not really a very effective ploy, I think, because appeasement is something easy to push back on. I mean, there are problems that Obama faces in regards to his record on security, foreign policy, just experience in that whole area. And so it's going to be a major theme of the Republicans. But to equate Obama's position with appeasement, I mean, for instance, Joe Biden has been on most of the major networks going after President Bush, and Bush made that possible. And I think that you can pretty effectively check that charge. So I'm not sure that it necessarily helped McCain, though. McCain kind of jumped in and, you know, made the claim that Obama isn't experienced enough. And this is going to be a common theme, and we'll see how it plays out. But, of course, the election is going to be held in November, and Obama has consistently become a better candidate over time, and he shows no signs of not getting better. He's also going to get more and more experience. He also learned more and more about policy. You know, the problem is that McCain's not going to get better as a candidate. Obama has the chance, and this could be an election that is a really difficult one for the Republicans.
I think the surprise to me about the Bush comments were that he made it overseas. And if he'd made it in the United States, I think that would have been seen as fair game. But I think it's very different when either a president or a American official says something that's critical of somebody who is president or is likely to be president when they're overseas. And I think that probably went outside the normal bounds of politics.
Does this presidential primary season, is it actually longer than most, or does it just seem that way because there's so much more information coming at us with the internet and cable TV and constant replaying of everything?
Well, we have had previous nomination processes in the sort of modern period, the period since we've really gone heavily to primaries as the method of delegate selection, where they've gone on for a long period of time. The 1972 contest on the Democratic side, for example, came down to a June primary in California between Hubert Humphrey and George McGovern, which was closely fought and which McGovern barely won. And in fact, that campaign carried on till right up through the convention. So we have had instances where things have gone on quite a long time. And John may recall, I'm not sure how long the Reagan-Ford contest in 1976 ran on.
Well, actually, the Ford contest with Reagan ran on through almost to the convention, because Reagan made the effort to get the uncommitted delegates, not superdelegates, but uncommitted delegates, to join his campaign. And he nominated a liberal for his VP, or he said he would choose this person, and a guy named Schweikert from Pennsylvania. And that alienated a lot of conservatives. In fact, it lost him the Mississippi delegation. So he had anticipated it giving him more delegates. It actually ended up hurting him. And so things weren't really completely sold on the Republican side until June or July of 76. 84 went on a while. 80, by some standards, on the Democratic side went on a while. You can see at various points in time. I mean, this process, everybody thought would be over early because of the front loading, and then it turned out not to be the case. And so people's expectations weren't met. And so it seems longer than it really was. I think it's one of the most interesting processes that have unfolded, because you really do have, for the first time in a long time, two highly skilled and highly competitive candidates battling for the nomination. And in a year when you want to battle for it because it's such a good Democratic year. I mean, the conditions are ripe for Democrats to do well across the board. And so that among the reasons why you fight for this isn't just to be the nominee, is because the nominee is going to be well positioned to compete successfully come November.
I think there are two things which have stretched out the process this year, one of which we don't normally expect, and that is that both of the main Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, have hard support. Normally in presidential nominating processes and in primary politics generally, support tends to be rather soft. And that means as a candidate does well or badly, it's very easy for their fortunes to go up and down, and for them, after losing a series of events, not to be able to recover. In this case, both candidates have hard support. And that means that, you know, if you look at polling data, for example, in Pennsylvania, at one point, Hillary Clinton, the polling data was up 15 to 20 points. And Obama was able to eat into that maybe 5 points worth, even though he spent an awful lot of money in Pennsylvania and campaigned very hard. And the reason is she had very hard support there, and you couldn't eat away at it much. And similarly, he has a base of hard support. So I think that's one reason that things have gone on. The second reason is that it used to be, although it was proportional on delegate selection, most of the states on the Democratic side allowed winner-take-all within congressional district. So if you carried a congressional district, you carried all the delegates in that congressional district. Now the rules have changed somewhat, and there is even proportional representation within congressional district in terms of the distribution of delegates, meaning that you have to get an overwhelming victory to get in a state to take much more than a sort of a marginal win in terms of the delegate count.
Do you agree with both Obama and Clinton when they say that they will come together as far as their supporters, and that, you know, they'll vote for whichever one, you know, gets the nomination?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of polling data that people have pointed out to saying, you know, that 30%, 40% of Hillary Clinton voters claim they'll never vote for Obama. That's an example of people restating their support for Clinton as opposed to being opposed to Obama. You know, we have a long campaign. People come home at the end of the campaign. What I mean by that is that Democrats will start voting for Democrats and Republicans will start voting for Republicans. The Republican base will continue to come home, and that's just a process of the campaign. What we don't know is exactly how Clinton and Obama will bring this to a close. Of course, one possibility that's been discussed a lot is that Clinton could become vice president. If she does, that would certainly provide a lot of reason for her hardcore support, which Bruce just alluded to, you know, falling in line for Obama. It would probably hasten it. I don't know that how much it would actually add to it, but it certainly would hasten it. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, how there'll be now a lot of speculation, not only about Hillary Clinton, but, of course, who McCain chooses. And one of the things that is pretty clear is the ability to predict who are going to be the VP nominees is not very successful, because these candidates have kind of a personal judgment. No one would have predicted Gore would have been Clinton's VP choice, or Cheney, or Lieberman. You kind of go through the long list. And so it's going to be a matter of not only political calculation, but also just comfort level. Who do they want to govern with? And that matters a lot, and that's a personal judgment. And so it gives the new news media, who need, you know, a lot of things to talk about, something to speculate about, but doesn't mean that they'll be very well informed about it.
I think a lot of how well things come together depends on what the candidates do. I mean, you know, if it's just, you know, raising hands at the convention, that's one thing. But, you know, if Clinton decides, if she, assuming that Barack Obama is a nominee, and she decides to go out and actively campaign for him, that is, going into states where she ran well and making speeches and organizing her active base of support on his behalf, doing more than just pro forma things, then that's one level of support. Clearly, if she sort of does the raise of the hands and I'm behind you and one speech at the convention, that's probably not enough.
McCain has had more opportunity to think about his vice presidential nomination. It seems like he'll go out with these people and raise funds, and I'm assuming that that's helping him decide who he's most comfortable with.
Again, as John pointed out, very often the choice of vice presidential nominee is not somebody we would anticipate. Sometimes it may wind up to be strategic, but rarely will we guess who the nominee will be. And so there's the classic Lyndon Johnson being selected by John Kennedy as a sort of ticket balancer. And we do have cases like that. But even when something is strategic, for example, Richard Nixon selecting Spiro Agnew because he wanted a more moderate Republican on the ticket with him, nobody guessed it would be Spiro Agnew, right? And sometimes it's very personal. I think one could say that George Herbert Walker Bush, in selecting Dan Quayle, selected somebody, given the other names that were going to be mentioned, who clearly wasn't going to overshadow him on a ticket. One of the things is that candidates have their own personal preferences and their own ideas of what is a good strategic choice. And I think the general public and the news media and the pundits are very bad at guessing those.
When will the negative ads start, John? I guess there are a few already circulating,
right?
But just in a few states.
Well, I mean, there's going to be two sources of the negative ads, the candidates themselves and, of course, these 527 groups.
You know, 527s are what?
Well, 527s are these independent expenditure organizations that were basically a product of the campaign finance reform bill that McCain, among others, spearheaded through Congress. And so it's a way, rather than having soft money into the parties and they get that money that way, they now have created their own organizations. And the very famous Swift Boat ad from 2004 is a classic example of a 527. We'll see those coming up again and again. And they'll certainly, if 2004 is any indication, about four out of every five 527 sponsored ads will be negative. The general election campaign between Obama and McCain, again, assuming that Obama's the nominee, both candidates will claim they're not running negative ads. They'll both claim they're not being negative, but they'll then run attack ads and try to claim, oh, it's not negative, it's telling the truth, or some sort of other little dodge out. I think the campaign's going to inevitably have to be quite negative for a couple of reasons. One, because it's really close. Two, the parties have a lot of differences. But also, McCain faces the following task. The Obama's has a lot of problems that have been raised during the course of the campaign with Reverend Wright, experience in foreign policy, other stuff. All this has been vetted, discussed, and people can have their opinions about it. But the thing that's not come out yet is that Obama is, in fact, liberal. He has a pretty liberal voting record. Now, the reason why it hasn't come out is because Senator Clinton also has a pretty liberal voting record, and there's not enough difference there to make that a charge. So that McCain needs to define Obama along these lines, and that's going to require some attacks. At the same time, the Obama people have to attack McCain because McCain's going to try to say he's not tied to the Bush administration, and it's going to be Obama's responsibility to tie him, especially in regards to Iraq, especially in regards to the economy, tie him, and that's going to require some attacks too. So they're definitely going to come. But again, you know, this is an opportunity for the public to learn some important things because they need to know about Obama's voting record. They need to know about McCain's plans for Iraq and how it might be the third Bush administration, or maybe not. He needs to push back on that. He's been critical of the Bush administration, but whether he can provide enough separation, you know, that's what the campaign's for, and we'll see how it plays out.
McCain likes to say that he will run a very high-level campaign and, yeah, and won't stoop to previous experiences.
Well, I find that, frankly, a political statement. I mean, McCain is a very smart politician. He's very skilled. He'll do what's necessary. And if you take a look at some of the attacks he aired against Romney, he shows no reluctance to go on the attack. And perfectly fairly, by the way. I mean, you know, you can attack Romney for a variety of different things, and he did. But it's a rhetorical move both by Obama and McCain to claim they're above negative politics while they're, in fact, going on the attack. And that's just the nature of it.
And how will race be handled? I know McCain has said he would certainly not bring it up, right?
Well, I don't think he needs to bring it up. It's obvious. I mean, one of the differences, I've been making a comparison, for example, that John Kennedy was to Al Smith, who was the first Catholic to run for president in 1928, as Barack Obama is to Jesse Jackson or to Al Sharpton, and thus with a space of time, obviously, in between. Al Smith looked like that first-generation Irish-American New York Poll. He spoke like him. He acted like him, cigar-smoking, derby-wearing. John Kennedy looked like the Harvard graduate that he was. And although people knew he was an Irish Catholic, he did not look like that first-generation Irish Catholic. He looked like, you know, the all-American person. Similarly, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton were candidates who appealed largely to African-American voting base and did not have and never were able to develop broad crossover appeal as candidates. They looked like politicians who were from their group and epitomize that group in some ways, both in behavior, in policy positions, and in the way they spoke. Barack Obama looks like John Kennedy. He's a Harvard Law graduate, right? And has a very different sort of speaking style in a very different manner. So the question is, can he make that same transition that John Kennedy was able to make? The real difference is that when you looked at John Kennedy, you didn't look and say, oh, he's an Irish Catholic. When you look at Barack Obama, you know that he's an African American. And so I think that's always going to be there as a subtext to this contest. And I think the McCain campaign has to be very wary about how they deal with that.
But conversely, I guess Obama really needs to define what his values are, because already throughout the campaign it seems like people have raised questions about his patriotism and where he stands.
Well, I think that's always a problem. Candidates have to be able to define themselves and not let the other campaign define them. And I think that you're seeing partly a change in the way the Obama campaign is starting to go about this. I'm not sure that we're going to, you know, go into the general election and that Reverend Wright will be the story. I think there are going to be other stories by then in the campaign. Some things obviously will come back up. But I think, you know, you saw yesterday with the Bush statement in Israel, Democrats immediately jumping to the fore and saying, you know, this is incorrect. It's an unfair tactic, you know. That's not correct. And then attacking McCain and saying, well, McCain has said he'd sit down with Hezbollah right at one point. So, and having that on tape. So there are some, there is going to be give and take on these sorts of things. I don't think you'll see Barack Obama do what John Kerry did in a reaction to the Swift boat thing 4 years ago. I think you'll see a much more aggressive reaction from this campaign. They probably, you know, you learn from the lessons of the last time out.
And he has some of the same people working for him, correct? Such as Axelrod, David Axelrod.
Well, but I mean, the difference between the Kerry campaign and the Obama campaign is the difference between night and day, frankly. I mean, the Obama campaign has been smart from day one. Despite somebody who's supposed to be inexperienced in national politics, he managed to assemble a campaign team that understood the rules of the game far better than the Clinton campaign. They understood that these caucuses were going to matter. They understood that there was likely to be life after the front loading of February 5th. They had planned, and they managed to tap into new money in ways that is unprecedented. Part of the Kerry problem in 2004 was that they had scheduled their convention in a time in late July, and then they had a month before the Republican convention, but they still had the same amount of public funding. So the Kerry campaign had to make it last an entire month longer. And they really just didn't have the financial resources to address the Swift boat as quickly, attacks as quickly as they might have. Obama is not going to have any problem with money this campaign. In fact, I suspect he won't even take public funding because he's got a huge amount of money that he can continue to raise because a lot of his contributors haven't come close to the 2,300. And just imagine the excitement that he'll generate once he becomes the official nominee. So this is a campaign that's shown to be very smart, and they've even managed to weather these attacks that and all these problems tied to the right campaign. I mean, you're going to see it come up, and they're going to be ready for the race card. It's going to come up, not necessarily from McCain. It's going to come up from some other side group. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I mean, the public will have a chance to see Obama. The benefit of a long campaign is he's gotten to be better. He's gotten a chance to get himself known. But now he'll have massive stages. I mean, well, not massive, but really critical stages by which to make his case. When he makes the acceptance speech in Denver come at the end of August, when he goes on these debates, I mean, these are huge opportunities, and he will contrast himself. And the other implicit attack that McCain's going to face, not it's race on Obama's side, age is going to come into play with McCain. And I wouldn't be surprised at the end of the day that it becomes as equally important a concern, especially if he shows any signs of being tired.
And anytime McCain says anything that seems a little bit like he didn't know what he was saying, there's sort of that subtle feeling of, you know, is this person really thinking clearly?
And it's not necessarily fair, because one of the things that these campaigns do is they drain you. These men and women campaigning right now have been doing this on 3 to 4 hours sleep for the last 400 days approximately. They are bone tired and they have to continue going. And so Obama can act tired, which he has, and no one thinks anything about it. The man's 46, 47 years old. No problem. He's healthy. McCain, who's 72, shows any signs of it. And even if a 40-year-old would be tired, he gets nailed for it. It's really an unfair thing, but it's part, you know, the public wants to know if he's up to the task. And, you know, I actually think he is, but you know, we'll see. He is 72 is old enough to raise some concerns, but at this point in time, he's put him to rest at least.
Is this the reason that the conventions are later this year because of the financing issue? Because I guess the Republicans are not till even around Labor Day.
Well, yes and no, in the sense that the Democrats never wanted to have another month gap like they faced. And so with the Republicans realize that if they have their convention so late, A, they did it in 2004 to take advantage of the 9/11 holiday, so to speak. I mean, not the celebration, but the remembering it and the benefits that would accrue to Bush, because he was obviously on call, so to speak, and answered the call as well. So they'd moved it up, and then that gives you only a 2-month window of campaigning on public money. So that was part of the plan, and the Republicans thought that worked in 2004, so they did it again. But the Democrats weren't going to be caught, and so they decided to move it up just a week before the Republican one to kind of match them. But of course, it turns out that in this season, it's likely that Obama won't choose the public funding. Though conceivably, if he faces enough pressure and criticism, he might back down. But then he still is going to have a huge war chest of which he can then wage battle up until that point, a luxury that someone like Kerry did not have in 2004.
What do you hope your students will take away from your elections course in the fall?
Not only do I hope they take away sort of factual understanding of this given election, but I hope they get some broader understanding of elections in general and understand what the place of elections are in American politics. So that means, you know, understanding something about public opinion, understanding something about where do candidates come from and why do we choose them, understanding something about the effects of rules and procedures, understanding something about political advertising, understanding in the end that, and we include this in the course, that, you know, the question of do elections matter, that the election is the start of the political process, not the end of the political process. And so, you know, it sets into motion potential changes in public policy. So there's that, you know, do they understand how elections get linked to changes in public policy and how changes in public policy are very difficult to achieve in the American governing system.
And this will be not only the presidential election, but then also the congressional elections?
Yes. Yeah, we spend a good amount of time on congressional elections as well. John spends a little more time on the presidential side. I spend a bit more time on the congressional side, given our different expertise.
Some students are going to think the course is going to be a discussion of what the New York Times said that morning. And certainly we will bring that to bear when appropriate, but only when it speaks to larger questions about election itself and about how elections work. Because one of the things that political science has accrued over the last 50, 60 years is really a huge amount of information about how presidential and congressional elections work. I mean, we just know a lot of stuff, and we want to be able to present that in a way that gives them a broader understanding of the process. This particular year, our course, will also have the advantage of not just a great contest, it'll be great fun, but we're also going to have the benefit of bringing Vinton Weber, former member of Congress, key advisor to the Romney campaign, into the classroom with us, and he's going to be one of the co-teachers. And Congressman Ford also will be part of it, so that this provides an additional angle to enrich the students' experience. But one of the things about both Congressman Ford and Congressman Weber is that these are folks that are analytical. They think about politics in broad ways, not just, you know, some sort of narrow, small way. So the point of fact, they augment this mission of trying to get people to understand elections, because they're asking more thoughtful questions than somebody might think you get on like a some sort of pundit talk show and on CNN or Fox or whatever. That these are two pretty thoughtful people, and Professor Weber, as I call him now, it will provide a really great opportunity, especially with contacts. And there's a couple of journalists that we'll probably bring to campus. We also have a couple of additional scholars, somebody who's an expert in Latino politics, another person who has additional expertise to supplement Bruce's in congressional elections. You know, the students, it's a large class, and so that's the downside for the students. But the upside is that they're going to have lots of exposure from all different angles in the campaign, and in a nonpartisan way. That is, that we're not going to just bring in Democrats, not just bring in Republicans. We're going to bring in a mix. And with people something to say, we don't want them to put forward their partisan agendas. Rather, we want them to put forward their expertise.
Most of these students, this is the first or second set of elections where they will pay paid close attention. Many of the students who register for the course are very strong partisans. They're strong Democrats or strong Republicans. What we found is that they don't necessarily have a feel of what it's like to win or lose. That is, you know, one of the things in American politics is, regardless of whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, there are some elections in which your party does well and some elections in which your party doesn't do well. And so one of the things I think we try to teach in here is that, you know, the American political process doesn't have closure to it. You know, you go back and, you know, you say, well, what can we do better next time? What do we do to, you know, represent ourselves to be the loyal opposition? That there are going to be years when you win and there are going to be years that when you lose. And you sort of have to adjust to that. Yeah. It's not where, you know, oh, well, we lost, let's go to the barricades. That's not what American politics is about.
Yeah, it's in fact one of the things, this year is a pro-Democratic year. It doesn't mean the Democrats will, you know, win everything, but, you know, we have good reasons to believe they're going to do pretty well. But at the same time, if the Democrats do as well as we would anticipate, the information we have about congressional elections suggests that 2010 could be a very different story, and that it wouldn't necessarily be a continuation of Democratic dominance, but could be a backlash. You don't know. But it's like, you know, rooting for competitive sports teams. Your team does not win the championship every year, and in fact, you get used to a lot of bad years. It's part of competition.
The course is called just Elections?
It's Elections 2008. No, the 2008 elections.
John Geer and Bruce Oppenheimer are Vanderbilt political scientists. For Interview, I'm Amory Dear Owens.